ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। तीनतरं वाक्यं आश्रित्य समहीपतिः कलशाप्सु निधायैनां दयालुर्निन्य आश्रमम्। ट्रांसलेशन: द मर्सिफुल किंग, being moved by the pitiable words of the fish, placed the fish in a water jug and brought him to his own residence. We are continuing till text number 30, so I'll read the translations. Text number 17: but in one night that fish grew so much that he could not move his body comfortably in the water of the pot. He then spoke to the king as follows. Text 18. Oh, my dear king, I do not like living in this water pot with such great difficulty. Therefore, please find some better reservoir of water where I can live comfortably. Text 19. Then, taking the fish out of the water pot, the king threw him in a large well. But within a moment, the fish developed to the length of 3 cubits. So 1 cubit is 45 centimeters approximately. So 3 cubits means almost 1.3 meters. So hastatrayam, almost 3 size. Just for your information. Text number 20. The fish then said, my dear king, this reservoir of water is not fit for my happy residence. Please give me a more extensive pool of water, for I have taken shelter of you. Text 21. O Maharaj Parikshit, the king took the fish from the well and threw him in a lake, but the fish then assumed a gigantic form exceeding the extent of water. Text number 22. The fish then said, O king, I am a large aquatic and this water is not at all suitable for me. Now kindly find some way to save me. It would be better to put me in a water of a lake that will never reduce. 23. When thus requested, King Satyavrata took the fish to the largest reservoir of water. But when that also proved insufficient, the king at last threw the gigantic fish into the ocean. While being thrown in the ocean, the fish said to King Satyavrata, O hero, in this water there are very powerful and dangerous sharks that will eat me. Therefore, you should not throw me in this place. 25. After hearing these sweet words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a fish, the king, being bewildered, asked him, who are you, sir? You simply bewilder us. 26. My lord, in one day you have expanded yourself hundreds of miles, covering the water of the river and the ocean. Before this, I had never seen or heard of such an aquatic animal. Actually, the fish expanded to 8 million miles. Text 27. My lord, you are certainly the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, Shri Hari. It is to show your mercy to the living entities that you have now assumed the form of an aquatic. Text 28. O my Lord, Master of creation, maintenance and annihilation, O best of enjoyers, Lord Vishnu, you are the leader and the destination of surrendered devotees like us. Therefore, let me offer my respectful obeisances to you. 29. All your pastimes and incarnations certainly appear for the welfare of all living entities. Therefore, my Lord, I wish to know the purpose for which you have assumed this form of a fish. Text 30. O my Lord, possessing the eyes like the petals of a lotus, the worship of the demigods who are in the bodily concept of life is fruitless in all respects. But because you are the supreme friend and dearmost super soul of everyone, worship of your lotus feet is never useless. You have therefore manifested your form as a fish. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The demigods like Indra, Chandra and Surya are ordinary living entities who are differentiated parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord expands Himself through the living beings, Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam. His personal Vishnu Tattva forms, which are all spiritual, are called Swamsha. And the living entities who are differentiated parts are called as the Vibhinamsha. Some of the Vibhinamsha forms are spiritual and some are a combination of matter and spirit. The conditioned souls in the material world are the differentiated differentiated from their external bodies made up of material energy. Thus, the demigods living in the upper planetary systems and the living entities living in the lower planetary systems are of the same nature. Nonetheless, those living as human beings on this planet are sometimes attracted to worshipping the demigods in the higher planetary systems. Such worship is temporary, as human beings on this planet have to change their bodies, tatha dehantara praptihi. The living entities known as Indra, Chandra, Varun and so on will also have to change their bodies in due course of time. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, antavattu phalam tesham tad bhavati alpamedasam. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who do not know the position of demigods are inclined to worship the demigods for some material purpose, but the results of such worship are never permanent. Consequently, here it is said, Yathe taresham prithag atmanam satam padopa sarpanam mrisham bhavet. In other words, if one is to worship someone else, he must worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then his worship will never be fruitless. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even a slight attempt to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a permanent asset. Therefore, as recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tyaktva Swadharmam Charanam Bhujam Harer, one should take to the worship of the lotus feet of Hari, even if this means giving up the so-called occupational duty assigned because of the particular body one has accepted. Because worship in the terms of body is temporary, it does not bear any permanent fruit. But worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives immense benefit. So, Gaurang Priya Prabhu, I have been asked to render this service, and I seek the blessings of all the senior devotees assembled here and all others as well. So because it was a spontaneous class, just as the fish was expanding, there was a long translation and purports to save me from the time I have to speak. So I thank Matsya Incarnation on this day today. Very wonderful translations, very wonderful shlokas. That here one devotee, Satyavrat Muni, is thinking that the Lord is dependable, the Lord is dependent on him, and he tries to serve or accommodate the Lord to his capacities. And the Lord keeps on expanding, and he's also in return expanding his service to the Lord, depending on the desire of Lord to accommodate himself. And at one point, finally he sees that fish has expanded so much. And he thinks that, okay, now except for the ocean, there is nothing else left. And he offers the entire ocean for the service of the fish. And more amazingly, the fish complains at that time. The Lord complains, why are you putting me in such a wrong place? There are so many aquatics and I would be killed. So this is the nature of actually devotional service. It always expands. Bhakti is never static. It is ecstatic. And it always expands in nature. Like most of us can see for ourselves, when we first came to Krishna consciousness, the amount of service we were rendering. And over a period of time, we have just seen that we are just trying to render services, but somehow we cannot finish the services properly which are duly assigned. And it always keeps on increasing. So that's the nature of the Lord. As is the growth of the living entity and the desire of the living entity to serve, the Lord keeps on expanding, seeing that if he sees that my devotee can offer more service to me, he will immediately create a condition where he can render more and more service. But yet at the same time, rendering more service does not mean that that is our perfection of our life, or it's a better situation. When we are rendering more and more service, that does not mean that we are in a perfect situation, that we don't need any correction or something like that. So sometimes even after rendering amazing and big services, like offering the ocean and all, still the Lord will have to correct us. That you have done such big services, as and as I am expanding, so you are rendering service. But that does not mean that is up to the standard or up to your limits. Still, it is imperfect. This is the pastime of the Lord, how he always wants the living. Basically, the Lord wants to capture the attention and the consciousness of the living entity completely. And he wants to leave no scope or no iota of a single thought except for himself. And so physically, through the services, emotionally, through various situations, the Lord enacts in such a way that more and more the situations become demanding that we have to remember him all the time. Sometimes when we are offered some service in devotional service, it happens that in our process of staying in the ashram or rendering various services, many devotees expect that, okay, at least you do this much, do little bit more, and you keep on doing more and more. And then when you do little bit more, always there is a chance that you commit a mistake because you are anyways doing beyond your capacity or what our seniors are expecting from us. And but we still try to do. And then sometimes in that course of service, we may commit a mistake. And then somebody will tell us, "Arey, why did you do like this? This was not right." And then we may try to think and say, "I never wanted to do this much service. You only told, therefore I committed a mistake." So just see Satyavrata Muni, he is trying to offer a jug of water, and then the fish demands, the Lord demands, "No, not a jug, I want this." So he says, "Okay, a pond." "Pond, okay, a lake." "Not a lake, okay, river." "River, then ocean," and still he expands. So Satyavrata Muni, at that time, instead of getting into this thing that I have been offering whatever you wanted and still you are now complaining, itna ocean, after the whole ocean has been given to you, you are complaining, "This is the wrong place to put me. Where do I put you?" Instead of that, he immediately realizes that this is a wonderful pastime going on to humble my services, because Satyavrata Muni was thinking that I am accommodating the Lord. So he got humbled by this, the size of the fish. That it's not that in devotional service, when we are trying to do some service, sometimes, at least for when early days, I used to feel I am actually doing something for the Lord. But over a period of time, we realize that we are actually doing nothing for the Lord. It is just that the Lord who is trying to engage us, He is creating a space in our heart and our mind for Him to enter. And more we give space, He says, okay, can you give a little bit more space? Little bit more, little bit more. Each time He asks little bit more. Imagine the fish from the jug would become the size. Satyavrata Muni would not even think as a gradual progression of offering various things. So in a life of a sadhaka, as and as he progresses, it is not that in one sense that we are doing more and more services. It is actually the reverse way. Our services are always insignificant. Just the Lord is taking more and more endeavors to come in our life. It is the mercy is increasing, not that our services are increasing. So the only question is, do we want the Lord to perform His pastime in our lives the way He wants, or we want to continue Him performing the pastime the way we want? So that's the whole difference. Here also we see how that in the whole endeavor to please the Lord, Satyavrat Muni is trying to offer the best facilities or trying to do the most practical service to the Lord, but he lands up not completely doing the service. He has to at one point of time surrender. So that is also another nature of devotional service, that if one is always trying to think that I want to do devotional service in only the practical, my capacity point of view, then it's never going to be possible. In fact, recently, when I was in Columbus, one devotee asked me a question after the Sunday feast. He told me how to do devotional service practically. And I had just visited a few days ago the Tompkins Square Park, and seeing all those places, I was overwhelmed with the services which Prabhupada had done. ISKCON is actually Prabhupada's miracle. ISKCON is not an institution which has set up by organizational skills. To realize that, one has to go to that Tompkins Square Park actually. So the moment this devotee asked this question, it was like a very big message given to me, and I could not even think, but I just had to share this, that from practical point of view, there is nothing practical in devotional service. Because we don't see the Lord with our senses. First of all, we have to define our practicality. What is practicality? If we are going to define practicality means what we see through our these five senses or whatever, then devotional service has no scope. Because it begins from beyond sense perception. I just shared this point, that if we are so much worried all the time, sometimes you have to balance your services, but if all the time we are only thinking of how to keep on doing our practically doing this, practical, that's one of the biggest 21st century concept. Practical spirituality, practical this, practical service. But then if Prabhupada were practical in his life, he would have never gone to the West. That was being practical. Being practical was not to sacrifice to stay at an old man of 70 years of age going under a tree with no persons and singing kirtans with no money, with no support. Is that practical? If Prabhupada were practical, none of us would be practical in devotional service. That's a fact. And if Krishna is practical with us, we have no chance going back to Godhead. Think about it. If Krishna reciprocates the way we are rendering our devotional service, we will be totally gone. Because the amount of offenses we commit, the aparads we commit, it's a hopeless case. So there are the six anarthas, lust, anger, greed, envy, but practical spirituality is one of the biggest anartha because it brings all these things into place. It does not allow our... The only way to come out of our conditioned state is do something which is not really practical. In one sense. But all the time just focused on practical, practical. In fact, if we see all our material activities, how many activities which we render in the day are practical? From all practical point of view, some of the ashrams should not exist at all. Because there is too much of giving, too much of service to some people in the family members, but not very less for yourself. What do you mean by practicality? Is it that somebody should, I should just focus within the limit of my senses all the time? So therefore, the great personalities, they always try to see that, okay, you do your comfortable devotional service, but just little bit can you do extra for me? Little bit service can you do extra? Little bit extra. But that is just for our benefit. It's not that they are asking a favor from us. They may say it like that. The Lord may make us feel like that. For example, we do austerities. It's as if we are offering ourselves to the Lord. One sense, we are offering. There is no doubt about it. But it is actually nothing but we are giving the Lord a greater access to us. So it's not our favor. It is we are ready to receive more favors from the Lord. Most of the activities we do throughout the day are not practical at all. Right from we begin, it's not practical to work under a boss who does not love you and to serve the boss whom you don't love. Is it practical? It's not practical. People say, I want to see God, I want to love God, but where is the reciprocation? Where do I see him? So I was just telling this, one of the devotees there. You still serve your bosses whom you don't love, and that time you don't think about your practical lives, that time you don't think about this and that. Why only when it comes to the Lord, we have to always think that first he has to favor us, he has to do everything, and then only I will start thinking after enough analysis of his activities. Is he sure, is he fit to be rendered devotional service? So recently when we were in the Himalayas at Badrinath, some four or five of us, we went to the foothills of the Nilkanth Mountains, which is the highest peak after you go to Badrinath. So it's a very difficult trek. Actually, the mountain just seems to be just right in front of your eyes, but when you keep walking, it will take at least 6 hours to reach there, just the base. So we are walking, we are thinking just 15 minutes more, sir, 15 minutes more. And on the way, some of the local tribal women, ladies, they were going to pick some bushes or some leaves or twigs. So they were returning from that place somewhere from the opposite side. We asked how far it is. They said, this is just 15, 20 minutes. So, 15, 20 minutes, okay, no problem. But then the moment we went ahead, she shouted back, but for you, it will take at least 3 hours. So we were thinking, no, she's underestimating our capacity. We are kind of brahmacharis, energetic. But we were walking. Tulsi Priya Prabhu was there, Radhesh Lal Prabhu was there. It took, from the point where she said it took three and a half hours, perfectly. Because she knew our capacity. City life brahmachari means. So after we reached there, it was a very, very enlivening experience which I got there. It was not the foothill of the Nilkanth Mountains at the Himalayas, but meeting the Indian soldiers who were there at the base camp of those foothills. And I was speaking to some of the soldiers, and just talking to them, I just forgot everything about Badrinath and everything. And we were so excited there at the seeing the soldiers, and somehow I convinced one of them to show all the weapons and other things. But one of our devotees, he got more excited and he told, will you fire the weapon and show? So after that, that person said, no showing of any weapons also. So anyways, it was an exciting time there. But then I started speaking to the soldiers. I asked them, how is your life there? What do you do? And other things. I realized that their life is more austere then practically most of the brahmacharis, very austere. The kind of food they eat, practically they carry all the stuff of 6 months or 1 year at a time. And we could hardly, you know, at one point of time, the bead bag was so heavy on my neck that I was thinking, who will carry this bead bag? Because when you are walking up the hill, every gram seems to become a kilogram and a quintal after some time. But that person was telling, you know, I can easily carry 100 kgs on my back and walk. I was just so amazed. But then he kept on talking and I kept on asking. His daily schedule was to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, up the mountains, you are in middle of nowhere, there is hostile environment, and almost 150 of the soldiers are sent for moving around the mountains every day, just exploring newer and newer territories, just to be aware, you know, enemies can come from any side. And they go early morning itself, negative temperatures, snow leopards, all those things are there. No personal life, such an austere experience, and it's life-threatening. And every single day you keep on doing this, mountain rangers. And for food, they have some goats or sheep, anything, something, someday it comes by, they just catch and cut it and boil it and eat it. Very austere. And I asked them, how often do you speak to your family members or you meet them? They say that we meet them only twice a year, once for 1 week and once for 15 days. That's all. They are not allowed, they have a restricted talk to their own family members. The husband has a restricted talk to his wife and children. Imagine, being in a family life, but you have to be totally disconnected from your family. And then nobody comes to meet them. No family member or friend can come to meet them. You cannot exchange more letters than permitted. Otherwise, it would be seen as a weak mind that he is not fit to be a soldier. He requires too much of emotional care and support. I was scared actually. This is like a yogi life. Because we as brahmacharis also, sometimes we talk to our parents or meet them more often than the soldiers in the mountain. And he as a grahastha is bereft of all those, as a family member, all those facilities which a family life has. And we have more facilities in eating, sleeping, only defending. We have these things. We have greater facility. They have no facility. And after talking to me for half an hour, 45 minutes, the person said, now enough of talking to you. My senior has gone 3-4 times here and there and he has been watching me talk to you. We are not allowed intimacy here. That was the most shocking of all the statements. I said, you cannot, he said, we cannot be intimate to anyone in our life. I said, not even if your family or friends come. He said, no. When we go for 1 week, that is all right. When we are here, no intimacy. I said, within your camp of 150 soldiers, he said, no. If we are seen just talking to one person in a day, and if they see for 4 or 5 days that he keeps speaking to him for 20 minutes, both of them are in one corner talking, we will be kicked out. Removed from this service for good. I just felt this is too much of an emotional slaughter or a torture. Just imagine. Imagine we talk about relationships that you should have one intimate relationship at least. Then ashram, we have such a facility that we can talk for hours together to one person and we have close friends, at least one or two or three whom we can speak to them all the time. We confide so many things, they confide. But this facility is not there for soldiers. No intimacy. Nothing to strangers and also to your own friends. I told them, your life is very austere. You are doing more tapasya than we do. I asked him, you please bless me. That Because I am also undergoing some difficulties, but I now seeing you, I realize that I have no difficulty actually. It's a luxury which I am enjoying. And more luxurious that now Prabhupada says, doing devotional service, giving up your occupational duty and doing devotional service is more beneficial. As long as it's on the right track, it's more beneficial. I was just thinking that we are in a situation where everything is taken care of and we have guaranteed and assured returns, and yet we have this so much complaints with our own lives, with the situations around us. But these people, such austere lives, when they cry, when a soldier cries in the mountains, he cries alone. He has not a shoulder to share. Just imagine your life like that. Imagine you are in the Brahmachari ashram there, where there are one or two devotees only. And you are doing service and you just cannot talk to anyone. And somebody has done something or some situation has befallen upon you. You don't even have a person to share your frustration. That itself is a big benediction. After going to the West, I realized that's the biggest benediction we have here. You have at least a person to share your frustrations. What is practical in a life of a soldier? Nothing practical. He's just serving. And he was telling, we feel so sorry that we work so much, but because of certain political situations and everything, things are so bad. When we come to the cities, nobody cares for us. People look down as if, you know, they walk as if he's come from the mountains or he's a useless soldier or whatever. Nobody stands to even offer them some respect. Imagine somebody who is sacrificing his life. Entire 30 years they are like that. They don't even meet their wives and children for till they are old. When they are old, everything is finished. That time they start associating with their family members. Such austere lives. But just so that to save the country, they have to lead such a life. I was just so inspired how Prabhupada, just to save mankind or to save certain conditioned souls, how much austerity he did. Actually, just think from a corporate point of view. Today, nowadays is the time of consumerism or finance. People just keep talking about money and stocks and everything is rated like that. Big projects. Just think from corporate point of view. Because most of you are educated here. Suppose we were told by someone in our company that I have a massive project and the chairman says I want you to be the head of the project. What will be the immediate response? We'll be excited, isn't it? That somebody is entrusting me so much responsibility. And you ask, okay, where is the project going to be launched? And the boss says, in the West. And you ask, which country? He says, no, in the West. He said, okay, I have to go to the West and start this project. Okay, no problem. What about the money? No, that you have to raise. Okay, if I have to raise the money, okay, then you have some contacts whom I can... No, contacts you have to develop. If that is the equation, that you have a massive project, you have to raise the money, you have to raise the contacts, there is no support, how many of us will go into such project? Think about it honestly. Practically, none of us will even have the guts. We'll think that he's cracking a joke or something. Think about Srila Prabhupada, similarly. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur only telling him, go to the West. Not even specifically telling, okay, go to Boston, go to Philadelphia, go to America or go to London. He just told, go to the West. Such a hazy picture of an instruction. It's a clear instruction. Go to the West and preach. But where? West means where? West is too West. You can go from Bombay and come back to Bombay. Everything is West. From the western direction. Went there. Imagine, he did not even ask Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. give me at least one contact of one devotee. When we are doing any kind of preaching, it's an assured kind of thing. There is some contact somewhere when the program starts. Some, at least you have money. Even when devotees are traveling, they have hundreds of dollars in their pocket. Prabhupada had nothing. Nothing for survival. If there was nothing, he did not even know if I can stay in a hotel or anything. And more amazing is like just 1 or 2 years ago when all the 100 CEOs of, 100 youngest CEOs of the world had come in Bombay and Maharaj was giving some seminars in Bhaktivedanta Hall. They were millionaires and had a successful life in just a short span, a few years. But the most amazing thing was that all of them were young and they started young. At the age of 20, 22, 24. Everybody, one common thing was, everybody was young in the full of their prime youth. And other thing was, they had at least one contact who could help them grow their business, expand that idea. They had some platform. But just imagine for Prabhupada's thing. No platform. What is the platform? Platform is, my spiritual master has told, that is the platform. It is such a lot of ambiguity in the whole thing. No platform, no contact. And at the age of 69, 70. So there is nothing practical which Prabhupada has done. And therefore we have practical chances of going back to Godhead. But if we were to think like that for others and for ourselves, then there is no scope at all. So, just like Satyavrat Muni, he tried to expand his services as was needed without thinking something else. So similarly, now many of us have been also requested that whenever we give class, we speak something about Vada. So it is also now our spiritual master wants that we expand the services at Vada. So it's our endeavor. Whether we think it is practical or not or whatever, we live up to the service because mercy comes through that. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any questions or comments? Yes, bro.
He's making a comment that the Lord incarnated as Matsya Avatar during that age, came as a fish, and now he has come through ISKCON in various activities all over the world.
Hari Bol.
And he's expanding himself.
Great, great, great. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.